Dear Father in heaven, we just want to lift our voices and our hearts to you with praise for all that you've done for us, for this gift of time that you've given us in the Sabbath, time that we just draw closer to you and closer to each other. And today is a special gift to be able to spend a little time learning more about how to share your health gifts with others. We ask for you to be here with us, for your Holy Spirit to impress on each heart the special takeaway message for them, the reason why you brought them here. We thank you for what you will be doing. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, we're going to 5:30 this afternoon, and we will take a break in the middle of the afternoon. I'll be presenting for most of the time, and then the last half hour or so, Katja Reinhardt is coming back to address another one of her topics. So as health ministries director, I found that there were three top reasons for discouragement in health ministries. One is people don't help out. How many of you have had that challenge as a health ministry leader? You can't get people to help you. I'm not going to talk about that today. But you're going to get that tomorrow with Candy. Another reason that people get discouraged is they'll say people just don't come to our meetings. How many of you have had that challenge? Several of you. And then the third one, people don't change. All this effort and I'm not seeing it make any difference. And that latter one is the one that we're going to address today, is understanding how people change and how maybe another approach that we can use in working with them to help them be more successful with change. So understanding lifestyle changing our habits is not an easy process. We've all been there. We've all tried to change a particularly stubborn habit in our life and found it rather difficult, or tried to begin a new healthy habit and found it much harder than it seemed. So we'll explore a little bit about what makes it difficult and what are some of the processes to understand for successful change. You have this in your book, so I'm not going to read it to you. A little overview and outline and some objectives for today's session. But I'd like to start by dividing you up into pairs. If you would just pair up with the person closest to you and take 2 minutes to describe where you're at right now in the area of physical activity. Okay? Physical activity, whether you aren't doing anything or whether you are on the slate to run a marathon next week. Share with your partner where you're at in the area of physical activity. And you can mention any of these things on the list. Just take 2 minutes. Okay, if we can bring our attention back this way. Just hold on to that conversation because we'll come back to it in a little bit. There's three concepts that I want to explore a little bit for understanding change. And the first one is recognizing that God is the real power behind positive change. This little model of Venn diagram shows where this fits in our health ministry model. We've got three circles. A Venn diagram is usually made up of three circles. And where they overlap is just as important as what's in the three circles. But the three circles that we have here, on the right-hand side, the blue one is our health information. This is our health programs, our health expos, everything that we do that creates an awareness for where people might need to change and provides them the information they need to change. The green circle is lifestyle coaching. This is giving people not just the what they need to do, but how to do it, helping walk with them on this process of change. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later this afternoon. But the bottom circle, the red one, is faith in God as this change agent that we cannot change without. And I believe that that helps health ministries fulfill a much higher purpose than just identifying health risks or providing good health information, like many other health programs out in our world can do for people. Because in the end, what's really going to matter is, did we connect them with the Master Restorer? Did we impact their lives for the purposes of God? That's the biggest key right there. So one of the things that we want to do, the distinguishing key in our health ministries, is to make sure that that peace is in there in every health program that we have, that we're connecting them with God as the change agent. Bringing people closer to Him is the goal of our health ministry. Another passage in Ministry of Healing. God alone is the one who can heal. Those whose minds and bodies are diseased are to behold in Christ, the Restorer. Because I live, He says, ye shall live also. This is the life we are to present to the sick, telling them that if they have faith in Christ as the Restorer, if they cooperate with Him, obeying the laws of health and striving to perfect holiness in His fear, He will impart to them His life. When we present Christ to them in this way, we are imparting a power, a strength that is of value, for it comes from above. This is the true science of healing for body and soul. There's the difference between health education and health ministry, is being able to link people with them, giving them simple, specific information on how God helps people change, and hearing your stories of how He's helped you change, and some of the promises that you've leaned on in His Word. They will begin to understand and experience Him too as that agent for change. So think about it for just a minute, and let me hear some of your thoughts. What does this understanding of God as the agent for change, how does that impact you as a health ministries leader? How might you think differently? What might you do differently if you carried that mindset with you into health ministry? Well, some of the practical implications I have, I should have taken notes on yours because some of them are very good. But one that I have is one of the practical implications for understanding this concept that God is the change agent is that we want to encourage personal ownership for change, but we're not going to push them. We aren't here to sell them, to nag them, to push them in any way. God offers the gift of health, and He encourages us to participate in our healing, doesn't He? We want to be able to recognize that our role isn't to convince, but to offer that same choice that we've been offered. In Deuteronomy 30:19, I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Now choose life. So that is one practical implication in understanding God as the change agent. A second is engaging the teachable moments. The things that most deeply affect us, if you look back in your life, your most significant moments of change were not probably related to information. They were probably related to an experience or a relationship that you had. And health ministry is going to be focusing on trying to engage those teachable moments in someone's life. Being able to not just tell and teach, but to help people learn, help them to be able to learn from their experiences, to see where God is working in their life, and to be able to experience that health and healing and make the connections where He is working and calling them to be. Another key concept for understanding change is the stages of lifestyle change. This was developed by James Prochaska, at University of Rhode Island, I think, somewhere in Rhode Island. I'm not sure the name of the university. But its formal name is the Trans-Theoretical Model. It's a foundational concept that was used pervasively in the wellness field. It was actually begun in the field of addictions and recovery, smoking cessation, that sort of thing. But they've found many applications through the last number of years for its use in wellness, helping someone to make positive behavior change. It's very simple, deceptively simple maybe, but it reminds us that people don't change until they're ready to. Bottom line, people don't change until they're ready to. And it also reminds me that behavior change isn't an event. It isn't something that happens. It's a process. So let's take a look at that process. It's a six-stage model, moving from pre-contemplation, before pre-contemplation, thinking about it, before it's even on our radar zone, all the way to actualization is our last step. Six stages. And people are at different stages. They need different things in order to move forward in this positive change. I have a handout that I'd like passed out, if somebody could help me with this. Thank you. And we're not going to go over it in detail, but it's just another reference for you. You will see here that people enter a part that seems to circle around and then come out, these six stages. The stages of change are like a spiral almost, like a slinky, and people can recycle through it many, many times. For example, someone might think about changing and beginning an exercise program, and maybe they get a pedometer and they start tracking their steps and they become very conscious of their activity and they're doing well in that area. And then they go on vacation and they come back, life is busy, and they get disheartened because no longer are they walking like they were walking. They just got sucked back up into their old lifestyle, perhaps moving back towards contemplation or pre-contemplation. So let's talk about each of these six stages, help you understand them just a little bit better. This first level is pre-contemplation. At this stage, the person is not, it's not even on their radar zone. They're not truly convinced that it's important to change. They might be totally unaware and unconcerned. It isn't that they can't see the solution, they just can't even see that it's a problem. They're not aware that it's a problem. They have no intention of changing their behavior, and often they will deny that there is a problem. Although people around them might can see that there's a problem, they don't see it. They may end up at your health ministry programs. They might get drugged there. No, I don't. Maybe somebody can go to the business center and run a few off. Thank you. I had like 45 of them. But I guess we have more in there than that. How many more copies do we need? How many are we lacking? Oh, so we're good? Okay, perfect. Okay. So these people, they might come because somebody nagged them, may or may not stay long. They are, in short, just resisting change in their lives. They're resisting doing anything different. Often, sometimes people will label these people as being in denial. But I think a more positive way to consider them is that they just have a lack of information about their situation, their lack of awareness about them. So what we can do with these people is we can just provide a supportive context for them to be able to process, to be able to begin contemplating making changes. Sometimes just using the phrase consider the possibility can make a difference for them. In this little handout that you now all have, I've broken it down, and I don't have the last stage. I have the other stages, pre-contemplation through maintenance. There's a brief description right underneath its title is, to me, in one or two words, the language that you're going to hear from them that kind of help you identify what stage they're in. A little sketch about where they're at, and then the goal, what the goal is for that individual to be able to progress to the next stage. Some tasks that might be helpful in getting them to be moving forward. And then your approach, how you're going to approach them, and maybe even some specific questions that you can use in working with them. So this type of person is needing awareness. What comes to mind is some ways that we can build awareness in a pre-contemplator? Think about your health ministry, and what could you do to increase awareness? All right. That's one idea. Now, what about for the people that aren't even going to come to a program? What other things can we do to increase awareness? A walking club? Okay. What else? Health expo. What would a health expo do? Okay, different steps, different stations, and they might pick up some information. They might get their blood pressure checked and see that it's high and not have realized before that they have high blood pressure. Blood pressure is a silent killer, that you can't feel that you have high blood pressure. All right, can you think of something else that would increase awareness for the pre-contemplator? Think about the use of your media at church, your printed materials. Okay. Okay, health spots, is that what you said? a little health nugget up front in your personal ministries time, maybe a health nugget inside the bulletin or a bulletin insert, something in your newsletter if your church has a newsletter. All these things are just little tiny ways that we can send positive messages that might build their awareness that they could possibly have a problem. Did anybody raise their hand in the back? Yes, ma'am. Okay, good. So a little positive messages. Those little glow traps are pretty small, aren't they? Pocket size. And being able to pass them out at places where you'll find pre-contemplators that when they may not be attending church or attending your programs. Very good. So basically we want to be reaching these people as well, not just the people that are ready to make change, and not assume that they're going to show up in our programs because they probably aren't. Your contemplators. So the word contemplate is meaning thinking, right? And these people are thinking. They may have been thinking for a very long time about making change. They've passed by your poster on the bulletin board. They've maybe written down the details for this program that you're having, and they're thinking about going. But they feel stuck. These are the people that say, I may, I'd like to, but. There's always something that gets in the way, something that's looming up big and prevents them from making change. I know I'd like help for my depression, but I don't think it's that bad. Or I know I should stop eating meat, but my cholesterol's not that high. Or I know I should stop eating meat, but my husband is a meat and potatoes guy and is not going to want me fixing anything else. There's always a but. At this contemplation stage, the person has no definite plan for change. There's no plan, but there's the thinking of the possibility of change. There's this ambivalence. They know there's a problem, but there's something that's getting in the way. And they might be thinking about the logistics of what it would be like to change, how they might accomplish it. They're far from taking action. They know their destination. They know what they need to be doing, but they're still holding them back. So what can we do for these people? We can listen for sure and continue to raise consciousness just like you would with your pre-contemplator. Well, what are some other things that you think might help someone that is stuck with a but that's keeping them from making change? Yes?
Maybe relate some of your buts.
What? Okay, share your stories or success stories. Interviews up front of people that have made positive change, and you've heard the interviews in the meetings in the evening. Aren't they inspiring? They motivate you. And they can build confidence in people to be able to change as well. Can you think of anything else that might help someone in contemplation? Maybe helping them to explore their ambivalence a little bit, weighing the pros and cons. Usually these people have the con of changing is heavier than the pro of changing. They can think of the cost. It's going to cost them so much to change. What they haven't probably considered is what's it going to cost them not to change. They are thinking of how easy it is to stay where they're at. But what about the benefits of changing? We need to try to tip the scale a little bit for them. So having conversations with them that explore the benefits of changing and the cost of not changing can be a helpful thing. We don't want to push these people because that's going to build resistance. We don't want to think that we need to convince them. We're not in sales. We're in health ministry. There's a difference. And so with these people, we just want to foster that confidence to try to get rid of the but and help them move forward and feel like change is a possibility. One thing, though, I think is it's important not to necessarily take their side and empathize too much, because it's part of the change process to feel the muck that you're in. If we weren't hot or cold, we'd never go over to the thermostat and change the temperature, would we? We would just stay fine. We'd be oblivious that the temperature might need to be changed. But when we're hot or cold, we get up and change the thermostat. And the same way with our health behavior change, they need to feel that tension between what they don't like about their lifestyle right now and the negative consequences that they're experiencing and where they would like to be. That tension is part of what's going to get them moving forward. Preparation is our next stage. These people, yes, sir. Interesting. That's why anxiety and depression can be useful, because
it
gets people to change. Okay, so they're protective in a way, aren't they? They're helping us to, they're like our senses emotionally.
Good.
And mask it. Okay, so pain and anxiety and stress, this inner tension that they're feeling, that of discontent with their life, is actually something God can be using to motivate them to do something different. And that's where offering hope can be a real good approach for these people. All right, our pre-contemplators, the language starts to change. I mean, our preparation people, the language starts to change. You start hearing, I will. I'm going to start doing something about it. I will start exercising on Monday. This is sometimes even called the commitment stage. And these people are feeling a little more confident. They've made a decision to do something. They're not just gathering information about their problem. They're like they might have done in contemplation. They're focusing on finding a solution. Their focus is just a little bit different. And so they're starting to explore the resources and the options that they have available to them. These people are ready to sign up for your classes, and they might be working out the details of how they're going to pick up the kids and get home and get supper and homework done and get back to the church in time for the program. We can help these people perhaps by offering supper before, have a soup and sandwich supper before our health program, or offering childcare just to make it easier for them to be able to move forward into action. These people are planning to take action within the next month. That's another key to identifying the preparation stage. They are telling others about the change, which is also another key, an important step also in their change efforts. So with these people, we need to realize they need to build confidence. So we need to help them set reachable goals and help them to be able to develop a good plan for action. Helping someone move from that pre-contemplation to contemplation or contemplation to preparation can be a huge, huge accomplishment. Because we can stay in contemplation for years. We call them chronic contemplators. And think about your own life. There's probably every one of us has something in our life that we have thought about and talked about for years that we want to do differently, and we haven't done anything about it yet. We're a chronic contemplation stage for that health behavior. So many times we feel we fail if we don't get a contemplator to jump right into action. But if we get a contemplator to begin making these preparatory steps for action, that's a huge accomplishment. Because remember, behavior change is not an event, it's a process. Exactly. All right, action. This is the stage most of us picture with health behavior change. And during this stage, people are actively involved in their new behavior, their new habit. It might take a lot of energy and effort and thinking because it's not natural for them. They might have to be adjusting and dealing with some emotional reactions and social reactions of others around them. They're the ones attending your class, and they are very involved. It's a very busy, very busy period for them because they are trying hard. They've bought the cookbooks. They're trying to change their way of eating. They are beginning to exercise or whatever the health behavior is. The interesting thing about this stage is that only a small percentage of our participants are at this stage. Studies show that only about 20% of people are in action at any given time, yet we find that most of our health programs are geared for the action stage. So that's a big take-home thought for us to think about, that we want to not just orient our programs to these people, but to think about all the different stages and what they might need. The person in action, because this is all new, what do we need to be thinking about for them, do you think? What are they going to need? Support, absolutely. They're going to need some support. What else might they need?
Encouragement.
They might need some tools, some how-to. They might need ideas. They might need some accountability. They're going to have times when it doesn't go as well as they thought it would. They're going to have lapses. And so helping to redefine that lapse, learn from it, and move forward. Maybe even planning ahead for high-risk situations. Someone's, like my example earlier, that's been starting an exercise and going on vacation, planning ahead for that vacation and how they're going to get their exercise in while they're away would help them to be able to continue on in this action stage. Then we have our maintenance people. They are on track. They still are changing. Usually this is beyond 6 months. Action stage is about 6 months long. Maintenance stage is beyond 6 months. This is the person that continues to incorporate these changes into his normal day-to-day life. It's beginning to feel more habitual. He's not having to take so much thought about it, not so much energy. Still, our support system is critical at this place because change doesn't just end with the action. There is a lot of ongoing work to be done. Most diets are successful in the short term. It really doesn't matter what diet you have. You can lose weight in the short term. The problem lies in the long term, and that's why people regain weight so easily, because they're lacking this long-term support that is needed for maintenance stage.
Last week, you know, that CBN was that they has how important tracking is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Another tool, because it gives feedback. It helps them to see the progress they're making, see where they might need to change, see some patterns in where they tend to continually not have as much success. Tracking is an excellent tool at that stage. And in these people, if they do lapse, if they do cycle back to a previous stage, then what we're going to do is be able to help them kind of regroup and redefine their goal based on their new stage so they can move forward again. Now, Florida Hospital has altered Prochaska's last stage. Prochaska titled it Termination. And I like Florida Hospital's title of Actualization. This phase is characterized by someone who has successfully gone through all the phases, and now they've met their goals, they've maintained their goals, they might even be turning around and helping others along the journey to make healthy changes. The previous behavior is no longer a temptation for them. They have reached actualization. And so these people, one way to continue to keep them on board in this stage is to actually help them, have them become champions for health. Have them join your health ministry team. Become a coach to help other people. And that not only is a great way for them to be able to share what they've learned and instill hope in others, but it just reinforces the change that they've had in their own lives. All right, what I'd like you to do is refer back to your earlier conversation that we had when we talked about where we were at in the physical activity. Touch base with your partner and see, without them telling you, if you can identify, based on their previous conversation, where they are and the stages of change with regards to physical activity. So get back in your group for a minute and touch base and see if you can peg them on where they are. All right. So how did you do? How did you do at pegging your neighbor with the stage of change they were at with regards to physical activity? How many of you felt like you got them pretty close? Okay. How many of you think you still got some work to do in understanding the stages of change? Well, the rest of you didn't raise your hand, so I'm thinking that maybe you're just not hand raisers. So let's for fun, because I chose that exercise because I'm sure we have the gamut in here. Anybody in actualization on exercise? They wake up to move. They love to move. Okay, we've got a couple of you. I want you to notice not who's raising their hand, but the number of hands. So you can kind of get an idea, which is very typical often, of how the percentages of each category in a large group can look. We had 3 hands for actualization. How many think they're in maintenance? They exercise fairly regularly, but it's still something they have to work at. All right, so a little more hands. We probably have maybe 10. How many in action? Okay, again about 10. How many in preparation? All right, about 3. How many in contemplation? Yes, you can be halfway because behavior change is not an event. It's a process. Yes, you can. Good question. So we had a few of you in contemplation. And anybody in pre-contemplation? Probably not. You couldn't have been here all week long and been in pre-contemplation for exercise. So, absolutely. It's very cyclical. You cycle back, and there are many times you can cycle through these stages numerous times before you eventually can get to maintenance on some particularly challenging health behaviors, like exercise. Okay, so what are the practical implications of this? How would understanding these stages change impact your approach as a health ministry leader in planning programs or maybe having a conversation with an individual? What's going to be different? What are you going to be thinking about? Anything that comes to mind? Don't look down at my notes. What are you thinking here? What do you think? Why would this be important to know? So you're going to be aware that you've got all stages and you want to do something to address each stage. Yes. Good. Good. Good insight. Anybody else? Yes. Teresa. Good.
And not just speak across the board and miss something.
All right. I like that word different because our approach is going to be different for each stage that people are in. Yes.
Maybe after having this revelation now of this particular model, I might step back a little bit and try and assess where are these people in this system? Mm-hmm. Am I really talking to a bunch of folks who are in that actualization stage, or am I really trying to talk to folks in the contemplation stage?
It can even change our marketing language. Kaiser Permanente, big insurance company on the West Coast, did some marketing for a smoking cessation program for their insured because they had a large smoking population, and that does drive healthcare costs up. And they only got like, I don't know, two or three people in that responded to this material. So they contracted with Prochaska to help them change the language. And so they marketed something to those that are thinking about stopping smoking or something like that. They changed the language to target your contemplators. And they had a huge, like 400% difference in the number of people that responded to that program. So it makes a difference in our conversations. We're going to be listening to the I'd like to, but, or I will, you know, these kind of language. It'll help in our conversations, and it'll also help as we're planning programs that will include activities for every stage, and even our marketing can make a difference. Good point. I think just becoming aware yourself of the different stages, you don't need to pass this out unless you're working with your health ministry team and wanting them to be aware of the stages. Now, that said, when I work with groups or individuals, sometimes it's really helpful to help to explain to them the stages of change because it helps explain to them why they have been successful eating a plant-based diet for years but have not been able to start an exercise program and be successful with it. They're in a different stage of change, and they might need to take a different approach to handling that habit. So instead of, you know, jumping into action with new recipes like they might do for cooking, they might be trying to use that same approach for exercise. I just need to do it. I need to just join the gym and go. And then they fall flat on their face back up to some of these other approaches that is keeping them from moving forward. All right, a lot to think about. Basically, the practical implications: don't equate action with change. It's not the same. Because what we do, the danger of that is that we're overlooking some of the other critical steps that people need to take to move forward, like weighing the ambivalence, the pros and cons, or beginning the preparatory stages for action. The next one, gear your program. We've already talked about that. Gear your program and coaching to all stages, not just to action. Tailor your approach. We talked about that. People will need different things. Keep in mind that an individual is in different stages for different behaviors. And people need to move one stage at a time without skipping stages. So we want to be patient with them. Forward movement is success. Not just that we've gotten people to take action. If we've gotten them, the pre-contemplator, to see, recognize there's a problem and begin thinking about change and moved them to contemplation, we have been successful in helping them move on that, in those stages of change. The last concept I'd like to share with you for understanding change is recognizing two keys to readiness to change. What do you think, without looking down, that they are? Two keys to readiness to change. Researchers have identified if you have, both of these are high, you're more apt to be ready to make change. What might they be?
Need.
Okay. See their need to change. That's a good one. Definitely that would probably occur before anybody could be ready to change. But those aren't the two, that's not one of the two keys.
Motivation
is one. Mm-hmm. Motivation. But somebody can be highly motivated and still be missing something. Confidence. Confidence is the second one, or self-efficacy is what the researchers have called it in this particular model. Motivation is there, an internal process that gives them the desire to want to change, to move toward goals. They believe they're at risk of developing some kind of problem or suffering some consequence, or they want to improve their condition. Usually it's related to their values, to what's important to them. If people place a value or importance on their health and their well-being or on this particular behavior, they're going to be more apt to move towards it. And then self-efficacy is their confidence in their ability to even be able to do it. And that's extremely important. The change has to feel like they can achieve it, that they can accomplish it. This little diagram kind of shows the importance of these two concepts to behavior change. Even if motivation is high, they want to, but their self-efficacy is on this side of the scale, they're not going to be as able to make change. We want to get people over here where their motivation and confidence are high, and then they're going to be more successful in change. And there are a number of ways that we can do that. Where is the sign-in sheet? And has everyone signed? Okay, it looks like it's... There it is. And has everyone got a chance to sign the sign-in sheet? Okay. I'm sorry it didn't make it. So we'll get... Please sign it, and then he'll take it. Get record. Researchers found health behavior change experts three ingredients for change. Before a person can change, they need to know what change is necessary. That's the information that our health programs provide. That helps them know that there's a need. They have to desire the change, there's the motivation, and then they also have to have the tools to achieve and maintain the change. That provides that confidence they need. And there's a number of ways, we won't go through them here because we're kind of condensing this weekend's workshop, a number of ways we can increase motivation and confidence. And just keeping these in mind as we're working with people individually or providing, fostering motivation and confidence in people in our health programs. Again, practical implications. How would this understanding of readiness to change, people needing both confidence and motivation, how would that impact your approach as a health ministry leader? Well, one, you want to tailor your approach to what they're needing. Are they needing more motivation, or are they really motivated? It's something they really want to do, but you hear that they just have had several attempts in the past that haven't been successful, and they just feel defeated, and they don't have as much confidence. So what is it, and how can you tailor your approach to help them build the one that they need? Keep in mind that someone may seem motivated, but they may have never explored their own personal reason to change. Just because your doctor has given you lab values that are way off the charts and told you that you need to bring them down or you're going to need to be on several medications, that may motivate them, but there's still a deeper motivation that if we can help them tap into, they'll be more successful. So helping people to explore their interpersonal motivation, the why behind the change, will be powerful in moving them forward. And then, as we said before, even if that motivation is high, without confidence in our ability to change, success is unlikely. Want to give us a bit of a little break. Afternoons go by much more slowly than mornings because we've already sat quite a bit today, and we had a nice, wonderful dinner. So before we take a break, I'd like to hear from you of these three concepts. God is the change agent, the stages of change, that trans-theoretical model, and then the two sides of readiness to change, motivation and confidence. Which one is connecting with you? Which one was a new thought or something that seems to make sense, something of value in your health ministry? What? The stages of change. Okay, what about that seems to...
That's important because you have to know that people are in different stages. Put them in a group of contemplators. Put them in a group of...
Interesting.
For each of them.
I would like to try that and see how that works. Now, if you look at some of the health risk appraisals, like Don Hall's materials, for example, there's often a single question or two questions that will help you peg somebody in their readiness to change. And so that probably would be the assessment tool that you're looking for. Just in a single question, you could do that.
But what stage for different things?
That's true. You would have to ask the question directly related to a particular change. Because they probably, the fact that you're at your meeting, they're probably in, you'll still have a wide variety. But asking for the specific behavior probably would be important. Mm-hmm. Good. I'm going to think on that some more. That's a good thought. Anybody else? What is your takeaway from this, what we've just talked about in the last hour?
All three are important.
Okay.
They're essential.
I wouldn't have included them if I didn't agree with you on that. Yes. Okay, good, good. So it's kind of changing your thinking about planning for camp meeting and what you might offer for those pre-contemplators. I like that. Anybody else? Yes, Teresa.
Well, I think when we look at just approaching our church members to become involved in health ministry, you know, we'll have free
our feelers out and educate ourselves on some of the cultural issues.
You bring up a good point. We are so complex creatures that the understanding change is just one aspect. Cultural differences, personality differences, learning style differences. There are so many different things that make us up as unique individuals. And I think Jesus was a master at really understanding people. And so part of our success in health ministry might be in following his steps in really learning to understand people and being able to tailor our approach in a way that is going to reach them and where they're at. Good point. Well, I'd like to give you a little bit of a break. It's 3:30. If we could take a 15-minute break, I want to start right at 3:45.
This media was produced by Audioverse for the NAD Health Summit. If you would like to learn more about the NAD Health Summit, please visit www.nadhealthsummit.com or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.